After this meeting, we received a message from the minister yesterday. The speaker of National Assembly announced that Priscilla Sobela would be joining Parliament, and in fact, we will be informed that she's a member of our portfolio committee. I would like to introduce and welcome her in that session because she had also said an apology on medical grounds. Such a comment to know that in fact she's part of us. I would like to welcome the Minister for Health and Training, Honorable Blaine Zimande, Dr. Blaine Zimande, the FDG and others, the officials of the department, the chairperson of the transport, and the CEO and other officials, our members. We had issued an invitation to also the SRC, the universities and the colleges. We hope that they will join us if they thought that we wanted to be here. We are going to allow the minister to give a contextual background, which will be a precursor to the presentation, which are going to elect on university registration and enrollment, and also at the smart allocations. Thank you very much. We give the opportunity, Minister.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the portfolio committee, our future ministers and senior management, which is here. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must say that we are really indeed very pleased to be here at this meeting of the portfolio committee to come and make a presentation on a number of issues that are important at this point in time. On our side, we thought that the purpose of this is to brief the portfolio committee on progress or the state of university and college registrations at this point in time. Of course, bearing in mind that the registration is not yet complete, but it's work in progress. As well as highlight some of the challenges and our interventions as far as in relation to some of the challenges. Obviously, the teacher needs to know what the committee is, so I'm just going to give the background on a few issues. The third issue maybe that I'd just like to talk about briefly, although this will be presented in some detail and next part of the year, is actually about next part. I must say, Chairperson, that despite all the hoo-ha and all that, the National Sanitary Aid Team, in fact, presents one of the most impressive achievements in the country. I mean, there is no doubt about that. Over the last 20 years, but even more so over the last 5 years, because the last 5 years, NSFAR has tripled. There are a number of highlights. Is that it has tripled from about 3.1 billion to just over 9 billion. I don't think there's any government budgetary item that has increased this much actually. But also, much more significantly, is that when the term of this administration started, there was no network for equity policies. Now, this is largely just over 2.1 billion. And in fact, what is even more impressive is that for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of headcount numbers, we are now going to be having more FET college students in terms of numbers at university. Of course, the fees are vastly different, but nevertheless, it's significant because it means we are beginning to achieve what we want to achieve in terms of more rapid increase of numbers for FET colleges, given the huge demand and the need that we have. Of course, it's not enough. We are not saying that it's enough, but the amount of substation. that they can very confidently say that the majority of students who come from poor families, significant majority, who have been admitted to university or at least to college, do get an assortment. I think it's important that we say that, because sometimes it gets presented as if, you know, students are being excluded and not benefited. Of course, that's what we give you in detail. But of course, I do need to highlight this one thing, which perhaps the portfolio committee might even want to grapple with this stuff. There are still too many cases in the country. You know, I went to one university, I met with the SST, maybe I shouldn't mention the university, because this is like I'm standing out for the SST. They say to me, there are many students who do not qualify for the SST, but who accept. So, there's a challenge that we are taking up as a government very seriously. But we would also like the portfolio committee to partner with us in this exercise. Partly that is why we, by the way, are piloting the new system, which makes us to talk about more competently than I can do. I can talk more competently about our political fight with the IP than the details of finance forces here from Bambuja. I think much more of an expert there than that. So, it's interesting also that we would, in fact, we would call on the portfolio committee to bring it over that, look closer to pilots itself, and what are some of the things that are actually beginning to emerge. Now, the second issue that I just want to talk about very quickly, because we don't have much time, and then I will hand over to the teacher, is that what is it that was done, because I know that members also, there are these issues that we've been having student demonstrations around NSFAS in particular and other things. I do want to say, by the way, that as will be explained by the DG and the officials, we always arrange with the universities and colleges the year before around what the projections are in terms of enrollment, even in terms of NSFAS beneficiaries, so that at least there is some idea of what we are talking about. But also in addition to that, I decided that I do this all the time, but this year I just decided that I will do this much more intelligently. Is that we've met already with other stakeholders this year. I've met, by the way, I invited some 4 weeks, a month ago, all the student organizations, all of them, without exception, to come and meet with us and to say how can we handle the registration period better and what are the challenges. Unfortunately, only SACO, ASACO, SAUS, which is the union of the SRC, and which other one? SADESMO was in there. Yes, a fellow was there. But I invited all. SADESMO was not there. DAPO was not there. They were invited. But I heard they were trying to occupy my office, so that thereafter. But they never came to my meeting when I invited them. I invited even the cook, youth, I don't know what it's called, but Honorable Banga. They didn't come, but they saw it fit to attend me in the meeting when they didn't come. We had a very good meeting with the students, by the way, without wasting time. Because we had agreed that we need to develop a network of links with all our institutions and a system through which we can be able to deal with the good problems as they arise. And that still stands, you know, the teaching might want to say something more because we're the task team that has been set up to work with the students in particular. I also got a chance to visit a number of institutions, but there was one I chose where just when there is just packed, given the invention of technology. I chose EUT delivery to chair, because EUT is like a ritual now. Since I became minister, every year there must be some demonstrations, sometimes destruction of property, the university has to close before it's done. It didn't start moving forward the minister. But secondly also, the pressure, bigger pressure by the way, for admission tends to put your universities of technology and your comprehensives, because that's why you have a bigger number of students with diploma classes and bachelor, and so that's not very high. So the pressure becomes bigger with your universities of technology and your comprehensives. So that was another reason why I chose DUT. But the other reason why I chose DUT is one of the pilots. It's 107 universities where NSFAS is piloting with the new system. I must say that it was very useful and helpful, because you are also able to see where the problems are. Because the problems are often not just with students, but also their institutional weaknesses. In fact, the reason why NSFAS wants to shift and introduce a new system is that it's only in name, truly speaking, that students get money from NSFAS, insofar as that's where it comes from. But NSFAS does not have a relationship with students. It simply gives money to universities, to institutions. Now, that's what we want to overcome, because then sometimes institutions play hand and mouth with us. They are not as holy as they try to present themselves. You know, they blame students. Yeah, you can blame students in some instances, but also the institutions themselves. There is a lot of blaming that you can do if we were to play this game. Because the criteria, therefore, is not the same, truly speaking, because each institution will respond differently to its own needs. In a way, maybe that's not bad at one level, but it's another level, then it creates 23 NSFAS systems, 25 now, with the 25 universities. So that is why, therefore, it's important for NSFAS to move directly to have this relationship with the students. We're quite confident, you know, that registration is proceeding at pace. In fact, the disturbances are not as they are projected in the media. We have had unfortunate instances where students have been arrested, but in some instances, some of them were implicated in destruction of property, something that is completely unacceptable. And I raised it with the students to say, you have the right to demonstrate, but the thing of destroying property is not right. It's just completely wrong. And I don't want people to go around destroying property when they are arrested. They come to me to plead for release. I'm not the Minister of Police. If they transgress the laws, they must not come to me. I don't deal with transgression of laws. I deal with the higher education. But they have a right to demonstrate that the issue of destruction of property is not. We're quite confident that we registration now, many students have already registered, and that our institutions are likely to start okay. Even those who are trying to use this for electioneering purposes, they find about there on the ground, engaging and dealing with problems. Thank you very much, Chair. With your permission, I will hand over to the teacher.
And thank you very much, Minister. Chair of the Portfolio Committee in Higher Education Training. Honorable members, my colleagues. Just briefly, the overall pattern in terms of the enrollment and registration, and thereafter, it's better we can come in and give some specifics. But it could be a long presentation. I'll just ask my colleagues want to talk to the issues that are quite pertinent. I understand the the presentations that we need to present. No, thank you so much. Yeah, on the enrollment and registration, for further educating and training, a student has count enrollment will increase this year by 131% from 345,566 in 2010, targeting 800,000 in 2014. The slide is not showing there. No, thank you very much. Then the third bullet point, student count enrollment at universities will increase by 19% from 837,739 in 2010, targeting 1,328,000 in 2014. So there is a growth pattern across the entire system. So net of budget has tripled, as the minister indicated earlier on. In 2009, it was around 3.1 billion. So that's over 9.7 billion in 2014. That's close to 8 billion. Now the net cost budget for the 2014 academic year will assist more than 435,000 students at all 25 public universities and 50 public ICT colleges across the country. Now, network of our students in terms of funding at ICT colleges has increased from 318 million in 2010-2015, around 51,703 students, to 2.1 billion in 2014, targeting over 210,000 students. Of course, these figures still have to be posted, but roughly, that's what the student is able to extract at the moment. It is slightly more than what it is. It's quite conservative now. Net for student bursary funding at universities has increased from 2.2 billion in 2010, benefiting 148,387 students, to 7.6 billion in 2014, targeting 235,000 students. So there is a component here, especially at universities, which are from other sources of funding. For instance, Funda Lushaka, National Field Fund for Scared Year, some component from CIPA. There is also a program that we are running in collaboration or in partnership with the CIPA. We call it Shukuba Project, which is looking at training black students to become accountants in a number of our universities, University of Zululand, Walter Sisulu University, Forte, University of Limpopo, Brenda, and in each, we are pumping in more than 87 million rand for that program. And doing well in producing black accountants to date. And this success is quite enormous. Now, in order to ease and speed up the resolution of problems from the standpoint of understanding, both from an institutional point of view as well as from student point of view, the minister has mentioned already that he has met with the student formation as well as students generally. The task team was set, which is more operational, with the student leaders to look at pertinent challenges that are affecting students from their own perspective. And we work on those same institutions because institutions are not affected in the state in relation to the question of registration as well as before. Now we are able to actually attend to the pertinent and challenges that affect respective institutions. That's amongst other things why we are able to quickly stabilize the situation, of course, through the leadership of the minister when some of his programs come. I would ask universities to quickly take that through.
Thank you, DJ. Chair, honorable members, minister, I'm going to take us through the Alerts and Enrollment Registration Program for 2014. And this slide just gives an overview of what's in the content. We'll start with something around enrollment planning, look at the status of registration as at the 14th of February 2014. We want to talk a little bit about potential applications clearinghouse, which is in the second year this year, and then some of the challenges around the specific registration period. And then we just want to make you aware of some of the programs that we're putting in place for petition development grants, specifically to support first-year students coming in for the first time. If we look at the enrollment process with the university, the department always goes into negotiation with universities around enrollment going forward, and we try to match that with the funding that's in the vote. The last period of enrollment planning completed in 2013, and last year we went into intensive negotiations with universities for the next period, which we extended from a normal 3-year period to a 6-year period to ensure better integrated planning. And part of that is going to be planning for infrastructure, for research development, for teaching development, and enrollment all integrated into one. So what the next slide shows is the planning figures for first-time entry students into university for 2014. The actual audited figure for 2012 is shown in the first column, and it shows the total first-time entry students, and then it's also broken down into the various schedules areas which are of importance and in our minister's performance agreement with the president. The second column is preliminary unaudited data for 2013. As we are aware, the HMIS systems at each university collects data and they provide it to the department. At this particular point, we don't have all the data yet submitted by all the institutions, which is why these figures are not accurate and are put in red so that we remember that they are preliminary figures that so far have been submitted. And then the third column shows us the projected target that has been agreed upon by universities. So we're expecting around about 197,000, 198,000 new into university in 2014, and then you can see the breakdown in terms of the various state skills. The last column just shows the average annual increase in headcount enrollment over the period from 2012 to 2014. The next slide shows the total enrollment in universities that we're expecting, and then also broken down into guest skills areas. Again, you'll see that the preliminary unaudited figures are not in red because those ones are not yet finalized. They will be finalized once we've gone to the verification process, it's got all information in from the institution, and they are audited and verified by October 2014. But you'll see there that our actual audit to total enrollment in 2012 were 953,373, and we're expecting the projected target of just over 1 million students in higher education in 2014. And again, you can see the average annual increase over the period in terms of total headcount enrollment. It's interesting to see that we're increasing at first of increase more than we are increasing the total enrollment, and what this shows is that we are expecting a better throughput and graduation in the system, as institutions have been investing in that in order to improve the issue. We go to the next slide then. The registrations in 2014 have obviously not been completed. The closing date registrations vary across different universities, from the 31st of January 2014 all the way through to the 31st of March 2014. And those are for this semester and year-long registrations. But we also have third type of registration, and those happen in the second semester, which means that we only will have the full registration data for the institution next year, after we've had a full account of all of the various registration periods. The table does show the data we've collected from all the institutions in terms of current enrollment figures. We've got the first time entering students standing at currently enrolled at, on the 14th of February, 126,811. We still expect that to go up due to the registration period not having been closed. We've broken down the rest into total undergraduates, okay, total postgraduates, and occasional students. And so at 2014, we currently have 742,416 registered. The normal target for 2014 for the first period is around 972,000, but in total for the 2014 academic year, it's just over a million, as was shown in the previous slide. So that's our registration figures and our enrollment figures for 2014. We thought it was important to indicate that the central application clearinghouse is in second year of operation. You'll remember that this is the first stage of the central application service that we are currently working on and planning. The department, through the CACH, have been in constant contact with all the universities, registrars, and we've been updated on a continuous basis on what spaces are still available in the system. 16 universities have indicated as of the 12th of February that they have registered their full complement of first-time entry students for January March period. 7 universities indicated they still have some spaces, and 2 universities are just currently completing the registration process. The next slide shows the spaces that may be available, the universities where those may be available at a particular point in time, and what we are doing is facilitating access to those spaces to students who registered through the CACH. We implemented the CACH from the 6th of January, just after the at the same time as the DDE results came out. It is targeting those child learners from the class 2012 and 2013. And we're really focusing on those who are late applications, who suddenly come in, and then those who have applied to universities but not achieved a placement at the university of their choice. And really it is about ensuring that we get better guidance to students in terms of the opportunities that are available in the system. The CACH capability is able to handle up to 80 concurrent incoming calls at one time, and it's operating from 7 o'clock in the morning through to 10 p.m. at night. And it's staff have been paid to assist institutions, but able to assist in all official languages is the message recording services, also the resulted, and the data capturing is happening on a daily basis. There are different ways in which prospective students can contact the CACH, and that has been advertised quite widely. But there are basically 4 options. They can put their information on and register, they can get career advice, there's an institution-specific feedback through the call center, and then we're also linking to the artisan call center. So CACH this year is much wider than just university students. It's also looking at all opportunities in the system, including universities. So that students who are not able to access universities can also get career advice and be directed to opportunities that are in the system. The information when it comes in is verified against those spaces from the DDE and IEE examiner, and that enables us to generate lists of prospective students who meet the requirements for places at universities. And these lists are being provided to universities so that they can check them against the spaces that are available and then make offers to students. The lists are also being provided to the seekers for learnership opportunities and to the LAM for offering opportunities. And then as well we've got a connection to Italy colleges. So it's quite comprehensive in terms of the opportunities that we are making available. So far we've had just over 8,000 students who have met the bachelor's or diploma's requirements for university, and you'll see that graph shows you the week in which the catch has been operating and how the volumes were very high in the first 3 weeks and then they've been tapering off since then. But there's still quite a significant number of students who've come through to the catch for assistance, and every one of them has been assisted in some way or another. We provided four sets of data at the Belfast universities, and that will continue. Some of the universities have been offering for specific data, and we've been providing that as that comes in. We will be working with universities over the next 2 weeks or so, particularly because now is the time when transfers may still become available, and students who've registered may not actually end up staying at the university, and so we will try as best we can to ensure that all the spaces are taken up by students who meet requirements. We will be going back and survey all the catch applicants in order to ensure that they have been helped and if they will need career advice to provide career advice to them. In terms of the service impact, in 2013, we surveyed 644 prospective applicants in the database, and we discovered that 28% of those who surveyed had in fact been successfully placed within a university environment. The rest have been provided with various forms of advice that have been found in worthy places. But we will continue to do this kind of survey in order to see how we can improve the service, and that will feed up back into the improvement of the catch and of the dental application service going forward. Our challenges in relation to the registration period have been linked, as the Minister had indicated, mostly to issues around student funding. We just thought maybe to indicate that the department has provided significant funding through the vote. There have been massive increases between 2011 and 2014, and these figures show the amount that the DHEP makes available through the vote. Clearly, there is more funding that's available. We already know it's more than $9 billion that's available in 2014, but that's through all the various other funding streams that respect. Our greatest issue is the respect shortfall, and we see this as a problem across the system. It's likely not only to be a problem in universities, but also ECC colleges, which our colleagues will also speak about. But as we've been monitoring the system, the key issues that have been raised by students and student bodies is that many of returning and first-year students are not able to register due to insufficient funding. We know this is a problem, and we're working hard to try and deal with it. As you know, the NISPAT review indicated that NISPAT requires 3 times its budget that it had been. It's also increased enormously, but still, it's one of those things that as you increase and as the numbers of prospective students increase, given the improvements in the matriculation exams, the problem is not going away. We have done work into the department, the Minister's Working Group on T3 Education, which does indicate that if we were to cover every single needy student in the system who is academically capable, we would need significantly more funding in the system, and we will work toward that. Last year, the university did report a shortfall of 2.6 billion, and that was across all students, continuing students and first-year students coming in. And that obviously, the funding shortfall is likely to continue into the 2014 academic year. The department did managed to provide an additional billion from the NSA to assist with this issue, and it has managed to provide funding for all the continuing students from 2013, and an additional 230 million of this, which would be earmarked for the first debt, to ensure that the students carrying that debt can continue in 2014. We also had very positive responses from the speakers to assist in providing bursary for some of those students in the shortfall, in the areas that they are dealing with. And there we managed to get an additional 411 million to assist the 2013 cohort shortfall. And then also these students will be supported going forward if they progress successfully. I think it needs to be seen as a really important contribution to the system that the National Skills Fund and the CICA is making to ensure that our students going into formal qualification programs are supported to succeed. The second lot of challenges are linked to the university systems themselves, and I think Ms. Chase will talk about their new system which is trying to deal with some of these problems. But basically the disbursements are done by the institutions themselves, and there are inconsistencies within the system in allocating this funding. Each university has its own process, and because of that it's very difficult for the department to control what's happening there. Some universities top class or CAP awards, and therefore students get less than they need in order to support themselves. And this you see particularly in the more challenged universities that are supporting large numbers of disadvantaged students. But what this means is the following year they have outstanding debt, and then they're finding it difficult to register. So it's a vicious cycle that we have to try and deal with. Some students are quite lonely being informed without knowing what the award size is. It's really problematic in individual assigning something when they don't know what they're signing for. And this is something that has to be dealt with. And it's only later on, they think they've not missed that. They think they've supported. And later on they find they own large amounts to the university. And then we also have inefficiency in the distribution of the funding at the institutional level. We know that in terms of NIDAS policy, only get provided to students who have a first pathway, who pass at least 50% of their courses, and they have a good chance of progressing and completing, and we do allow for sort of an N plus 2 support to ensure that students can get through. But not all universities apply that through consistently, so there are some students who may be meeting that requirement but not being supported by the university going through. And this is due to the fact that they are allocating the loans available into the funding that's being made available using their own criteria. These kinds of things are going to have to be dealt with systemically as we go through the piloting stage and the implementation of the new system. The example of UJ has come up a lot in the media, so we thought we would put this in here, but we are aware that UJ made a decision not to support students who had less than 80% less subjects courses passed. So those who have passed 80% of all their courses have been supported, and those that have believed have not been supported. This caused enormous difficulties because of the number of students there who really should progress academically, not getting the funding that they require. We are working together with UJ and Ms. Savalandis, but it is something that we think that UJ needs to deal with. It should be a principle that if a student is provided with MIFSAS in 1 year and they succeed, and go into the next year, they should be supported in the next year. It should not be a case that the university will withdraw funding for a particular student in the next year if they have been successful. The other issue is the students who are not able to pay their family contribution and then in terms of the means test, and then they end up with that debt going forward into the next year and finding that they are having problems with registering because of the family contribution not being offered. Universities have also overclaimed, and so students are under the impression that they are funded. Universities know how much money they've got available to them, and they should be managing that in terms of their enrollment and what they have available to students, and then overclaiming what's available. But unfortunately, they do overclaim, and then when those funds aren't available, then the students end up not being supported. So these are some of the problems. The other problem that has arisen is the policy on BTEC funding. This is specifically seen in some of our universities of technology. The problem arises is that we only mention the policy of our funding for BTEC, where it is a requirement for students to have a BTEC in order to register for professional professional houses to practice a profession. So those kinds of BTECs which aren't included in that, for example, the Bachelor of Technology in Administration, some of those kinds are not funded. And some of the students are demanding that these ought to be funded. But given the difficulty, the shortfall, the amount of funding in the system, it is that students coming into their third-time qualifications are the ones that we have to prioritize. And while we will definitely support those who have to have the BTEC for professional purposes, it's not because there's sufficient funding in the system that we will be able to consider other BTECs. The next challenge is around the late payment by MIRSAC to institutions. And that's one challenge that happened last year. I'm sure MIRSAC can talk more about that. But it meant that at the beginning of this year, many institutions were unable to get students accounts to enable registration, and that caused the difficulties for students. Institutions weren't willing to take on the responsibility of allowing students to come in without having those clear. And that's something that we had to speak to institutions about as well and work with the professor on, but that is now being solved. The last set of challenges really around the central education process. We've had some dissatisfaction with it, but we find it quite strange that institutions are having dissatisfaction with the pilot, and the whole purpose of the pilot is to find out what the problems are so we can improve that situation. And some of them were even, some of the students were complaining before a system had even been put in place, which is also interesting. But it's one of the key things has been the dissatisfaction of the S-Bus system, the student bus system, which is a cell phone mobile banking solution. But the purpose of this is really to ensure that we have better controls over what funds are utilized for, and students have less cash in hand. We have found in the past that students, given large amounts of funding cash, will spend it on other things. And then England not being supported for university studies. And the purpose of this funding is for university studies. And so the system we think is the right system, and we will have to sort out the glitches going forward, and in fact we'll talk about that. The fraudulent and corrupt practices that our minister mentioned is something that we really do need to deal with. Every time a student who shouldn't be given this study misses, another student who should be given this study is denied access. And these practices need to be dealt with systemically. We do know that the new system will limit that and will manage that risk much better, but in the meantime, every time anything is brought to our attention, we will be working with this to deal with it. And then the last one is the really important issue of loans being repaid back into the system. Students who benefited from higher education funds should have graduated. Not all of them are paying back, and we need to improve that recovery rate. When you benefit from higher education studies, you get access to the economy, and you get access to much higher salaries than otherwise you would expect. And it's at that stage, when you're earning, that you can pay back. There have been reports of people earning large salaries who not pay back, and we need to deal with that. Our major problem around this registration period has been around the unrest. And this unrest has mostly been linked to the issue of the lack of MIRSAC funding. We are aware that SACRA called the general strike, and it's a consideration for us because even though we've had continuing engagement with the various student bodies, and SACRA in particular, our minister had mentioned he had called them all and had discussions with them all. The department also had a workshop with them We have been through all issues around this discussion, including the challenges around mistakes, indicating the amount of money that's happening that's available in the system. And then unfortunately they called the trunk a few days later. We haven't been aware that they would be doing that at that point. We do think we need to deal with the issue of student engagement and student leadership on an ongoing basis in a year so that we can mitigate against these kinds of problems at the beginning of the registration period. Some of the unrest did lead to destruction of property and there were some minor injuries to staff and students. This is unacceptable. We don't believe that any protest should lead to this kind of action. We agree that every student has the right to protest, but they don't have the right to destroy property and to put lives in danger. We had incidents occurring at a number of institutions, but specifically UJ, TT, DT, NET, and EC, where there were some of these problems. Other institutions also had problems, but they were managed in a way in which we didn't end up with violence erupting. Some of these negotiations are still ongoing. What the reports are is that our secondary completely most institutions are calm, teaching has started across many of the institutions, and things are in hand now. As we go forward, I would like to make the portfolio committee aware that the department through its teaching development grant, which is now standing at around like 600 million, we're getting integrated plans from each university to support teaching and learning in institutions. And specifically, a large amount of this money is being allocated towards supporting new interests into higher education studies. We think this is a critical aspect because, as we saw before when we were looking at dropout rates in institutions, it's in first year when students are the most vulnerable. So a wide range of initiatives, first-year initiatives, experiences are going to be supported through the loans in 2014, so the grant in 2014. But specifically, we could use our important ones. The establishment and consolidation of writing centres as a central component for language development support for students. The second one is a dramatic expansion of tutorial and mentoring programs. I think our minister has mentioned on a number of occasions the importance of mentoring programs. And through this fund, we are putting forward a process where every single university will be developing these mentoring programs to assist first-year students, particularly those from rural and disadvantaged universities, to acclimatise. And this isn't just about academic support, it's about a pastoral care and other kinds of support as well that young people need coming into university. And then the other thing I think is very important is the growing acknowledgement with actions that institutions are putting in place for the urgent need to professionalize teaching at undergraduate level. And this specifically is around university academics recognizing themselves as teachers and being involved in programs to improve their teaching practices. Going forward, we're looking at the trial marketing campaign again being instituted. We are hoping as we extend this campaign year on year, we will get fewer and fewer student-based applications. This is going to be launched on 14th and 15th of March in AZN by our Deputy Minister. We are wanting to get this message out very clearly in 2014, but we don't want to be accepting any late applications in 2015. Students must apply on time. We also will be ensuring we improve on career advice in school into the PRIMAR campaign, as well as the SACWA VHET career advice service, and through the development of our wider career development project. The patch in 2015 then will be focusing on existing students who apply but have not been accepted in the institution, so the re-direction of these students, rather than on late applicants. But of course it will still continue with the career advance aspect and helping students get into various kinds of post-school opportunities. And then we are working on the development of the clinical application service, the actual business processes and so on, getting the Shishibana soon, and then you will be developing the system for piloting in 2015 and then phase in implementation across the system in 2016. Just in ending, I'd like to thank you and thank our minister particularly for his leadership and support for the university education system. It has been an important aspect in our work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's proceed to the second presentation of technical vocational teaching and training courses, and then maybe we can have a question and talk about the presentation.
Thank you very much, I'm a chairperson, honourable members, minister and colleagues. As a question, I would like to see...
Thank you.
students that's been anticipated in our annual report. Now, the next slide basically is a presentation of the same information that we divided to classify the program, and I will not explain that on that. In addition to the research, we bring this literature to also be the policy on the enrollment of the first class. And let me, put a reference and indicate that I can say to you that the enrollment of the first year was much, much smoother than in college, in the previous year. And this is basically because of the interventions of the department that is in place to support the colleges prior to the enrollment process in 2022 already. The department that is in the colleges is planning for the 2014 enrollment, and this process started in 2015. Particular attention was given to the weak provinces, mainly Eastern Cape and the Gulf, where medical personnel and technical assistance was deployed through our college improvement project. Now, we have started as secondments from the traditional education department, and we use them also subsequent to their training, to support, monitor, and verify the enrollment processes. We were able to do the monitoring at 170, contacting across the country. Now, we are in a stage where monitoring and verification reports are being analyzed and the findings will be shared with colleges and relevant to improve in the enrollment processes going forward. From the lessons that we learned in the previous year, after the monitoring and the reports there, we decided to improve the process in three key focus areas, mainly information and access, career guidance, and financial services. One of the easy things that this was problematic in the past is that upon arrival at a college, the students never knew where to go. So they spend time at childcare and so on. So it might look small as you couldn't care, but it's quite helpful that we requested of the colleges to have clear guidance displayed at all appropriate areas of the colleges, so that registration could be clearly large, direct to just the faculties and so on, which would be identified. Now, all prospective students arriving in acceptance for registration were recorded. They were given information types outlining the enrollment process and the layout of the campus. Now, we administer placement tests for students to have an academic level and to inform the learning option pathway for individualized students. We believe that will have a great impact on the success rate of the students. Now, in terms of the career guidance, we use placement tests to provide career guidance to ensure that students learn some of the courses to which they are most suited and have the greatest potential to succeed. In all colleges, there was a special that set up to provide comprehensive information and financial services on budgeting, transport, accommodation, and IT networks. First support was set up through the DHEDA plan and the website for legal doing for the colleges, but for all the day. Now, one of the issues here, you need to be aware that the tragedy being seriously was the time of release of love, which had an impact on the registration process. What happened back here is that the results were released this time, in terms of December, all results within the colleges, with the exception of two subjects, mainly industrial electronics and 2 and 3, where further investigations of possible irregularities were identified. Umalicia please approved the release of those results, and this happened within the registration period, and therefore it made it possible for students to register without any detect. The sort of planning that we talked about in earlier class ensured that classes could start on day one in the majority of campuses. We have now asked the colleges to implement academic support programs for students to ensure that all students have the required learning materials in time, because this was also a weakness lately to combat investment in oral treatment programs at all campuses. Now, we just want to share in this section of the presentation today with our colleagues some of the issues that came through as our team went out to monitor. So the incidents that were reported to us, with some of which we are trying to verify, others we have already dealt with, but we think it's important for the committee to be aware of our findings. We picked it up that the art colleges where students were not allowed to register on account of their inability to pay the registration fee. This is not the policy, particularly in terms of the poor students who deserve to receive financial aid. We issued an immediate instruction to the colleges to rectify the situation and involve the students accordingly. Now, another challenge is that there are inconsistencies in the amount charged for registration fees in two colleges, and therefore the students are able to complain that if you register in one college, you pay more, if you register in another, you pay less. This one we have to think clearly about how to deal with acceptance, because in terms of policies, this is the cost of the college that is on, you know, the structure of a particular college. So at a national level, we might need to see how going forward we would need to address them. Now, while we have recorded a mass improvement in the enrollment process of most colleges, there are students also who just cannot without having applied. It seems to us that the students who believe that going to an SEC college, you can drop a big time, and then you'll be admitted. So this is a lot of pressure, because some of them indeed meet the criteria for admission, and the colleges get pressured, you know, to assist them, even as they come late. But this has now put a lot of pressure on the colleges themselves, particularly IT and other resources. What we have done is to introduce a system similar to what is happening in the university. Previously, we used to issue application forms and allow students to apply at the beginning of their academic year. Last year already, we issued a system where students can also apply in advance, you know, of the beginning of their academic year. And that has taken a lot of pain, you know, from the colleges. Now, there are challenges regarding accommodation and saying over the lenders, this is nationwide problem. It's not only a problem, it's not only applicable to SEC colleges. Now, another expectation is that students believe that once they have been registered, they automatically get, you know, accommodation at the college. And at the same time, to provide an accurate information about it. But the urban and rural divide also is a clear factor where you find that rural and fairly urban campuses have limited accommodation facilities. Urban campuses use drivers to service providers in their facilities and food, and so they have the benefit of outsourcing some of the accommodation. However, this is not possible in the rural and fairly urban areas. To alleviate this problem going forward, I say the newly constructed SEC campuses would be built with an inherent requirement for student accommodation. All of them will have that. It may not be significant, but it will be a start, you know, towards alleviating the problem. So that's what we have today in terms of enrollment and the business thereof. I would like to talk on the NSF allocation and the new challenges, you know, thereof. I will not go into much detail because our colleagues from the university bank have been elaborating, you know, articulation on the challenges in particular. We just highlight the things that are unique to us. We present there also the NSF allocation to senior colleges against current perspective for 2011-12. And this slide was also presented by Dr. Carter previously to our colleagues on. Now, we targeted that this day, with a 2.9 billion, more than 250 students will be assisted, you know, by NSF, particularly at the college level. We acknowledge the fact that this allocation may not be sufficient to cover accommodation and cover needs of the main people. But basically, this is all that is available. It is important again to note the fact that the demand for accommodation and travel, you know, allowances. It's one of the three steps of that was actually stabilizing debt in the better income of student process scenario. Maybe it's not a solution, but it's still delay, you know, the demand for accommodation from allowances. We have had challenges last year of the delays in the choice of excess budget, my MSAT report. However, this year after negotiations, it was possible for MSAT to pay a 10% advance, you know, allocation to colleges. This has actually made it possible for colleges, you know, to always have a certain amount, you know, to fund it. We are very sorry to say, now, obviously, in order to, the professor talked about a problem where, in some instances, the minister also highlighted this, that some students who are not eligible have been able to receive any something others, you know, that are enabled have not. What we did have is to apply a new test for students. However, the administration of the program at the college level are not to remain the college. We will see, you know, throughout the end of the year, the sense of which the students later, you know, we have yielded, you know, a better result. Now, maybe for the last just a little bit on the challenges in terms of the administration of the college. We see that the lack of capacity by the colleges actually makes a imprecise determination of who should, you know, actually receive the allocation. A simple example in our instance is that last year, about 27 colleges, you know, wrote to us indicating that they had a collective shortfall of 118 million in allocation. However, there is a procedure. We are just working together with them, an internal audit of all of that, and it was found that actually the percentage, the error rate was 50%. It also very transpired that in fact the replacement shortfall for 5 million which was actually indicated by one colleague. So all the 46, you know, other colleagues who came for the shortfall, it was pushed through the auditing process by ourselves, letting them that we did not have a legitimate shortfall. I just wanted to highlight that because it's shifting from what we have to the experience. The other challenge that we mentioned before, which we need to mention, is that the students are not from the system by providing qualified information about their economic and financial situation. We are trying to work on this. We hope that, you know, with time, it will be possible for us to deal with the matter and eradicate the conflict. Now, it has already been mentioned previously in the presentation of the U.S. event that Ed classes highlighting a central act that was taken to five, you know, senior colleges to be able to reach improving the administration processes. We will also seek to understand what we should be made out of that, and hopefully we will see better in any class of these. When the rollout happens, we had a situation this year where we found to address the fact that we do not have a policy, particularly on the percentage that the financial eligibility, particularly for new students. We developed the Basel rules and guidelines. However, in them, was a suspension of 50% academic performance, you know, in order to be eligible. It led to significant challenges. It was a challenge and we immediately basically do that particular section. And it might be important that we basically consult a little bit more before we do this, before we can attempt to implement that. Now, we also have challenges that in the current guidelines, the group homes are within 40 kilometer radius of the center to qualify for accommodation. And the students, you know, insist in some instances that they also, you know, be allocated accommodation allowance within, you know, as they live within the 40 kilometer radius. Now, checklist, as I said, I want to elaborate more on the next expansion, because most of them are overlapping what our colleagues in the U.S. and Europe are experiencing. I just need to say the next step now, the way forward in terms of the, you know, total enrollment process. We will now subsequent to the finalization of the enrollment process develop monitoring reports on positive colleges. What we do is that we provide individualized reports per college so that they each are able to know exactly what their own problems and not generic problems about the sector are. Now, we again will identify colleges which are too weak in terms of their processes and make sure that there is, you know, some improvement starting in the age of 24 to enrollment processes going forward. Now, I indicated earlier when I presented the stats that 344,000 states that are accreditation is basically a certification from the colleges, but we will undertake the certification process, you know, by the end of February, and therefore also to get a college, you know, a report within March. So if you back to a second, I would say that the question is question.
Thank you very much for the comprehensive session. I'm aware that the minister may leave it about 11 o'clock and he has about 10 minutes before that time. Can we make some contributions on questions? We still have to go to the end of the presentation and have extensive deliberation on all the issues. I must acknowledge the presence of South African Union of Students and the South African Television and Television Association here. We had actually brought them so that we are actually one group better system about the achievements, progress, and challenges of the center, and collectively strive to find solutions. Yes, all of us. One question.
Thank you, Dr. My first thank the minister for the presentation and we introduced the book. Because NSY is still going to present the relief NSY's questions, but just to appreciate that the minister is aware of what's going on in this KBGC and the rest, and we appreciate that. Just two questions on enrollment and registration. Chairperson, once one is aware of what we call university autonomy, something is happening at universities which to a large extent prevents children from registering this university point system. We have cases where in some colleges, universities point system would be 36 and the student gets 24 points. The difference of 2 points, the student is not registered. I'm aware the department cannot intervene because of university autonomy, but it is a challenge, it is a problem. Students have been obtained his keys for higher bachelor and many more, in fact quite a number of students are roaming around this institution still looking for entrance, but they can't. I don't know what discussions the department can enter into with the universities. The second one, still on enrollment and registration. This one is quite a sensitive one because one doesn't have to be seen advocating racially based admissions. But we know that somewhere, sometime, something was racially based. Now, when we look at the increase in the enrollment of the sky skills, the quite a big increase. But one wonders how many of the previous ladies and classes are entering in each of these various skills, engineering and the rest. One just wants to know, as such, I'm not advocating racially based admissions, but is there a way Alan could know how they know of our own?
Cambodians know that.
You are American. Well, it could be an apology. And so, one would like to ask you that. And the last one, very interesting that Fiscal University that they are encouraging what she calls professionalizing, what she calls teaching and academics, if they can, and more professionally. How are you going to do that? What criteria do you have to measure that professionalization by academics? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Minister, and members. I think, first of all, I must also congratulate the Department of Anthropology on the report. I think it gives us a very good picture of what is really happening. Although we have had, and we've seen the numbers already. On the entrance numbers in the university, I would like to maybe just, and my colleague has also alluded it on the fair skills development. I'm quite pleased to see that human health and teaching education enrollment has increased quite considerably. The question is that enough? Are we sure that we are training enough people in that area, especially in the research education system, because as you know, we are really lacking behind quite a lot on the really good paying teachers, especially in the equity places. So we need to concentrate on that. What is worrying me is that there is only an increase of 1.4% in the engineering side of it. We know that we're really lacking into that field. As far as the funding is concerned, I think we must realize that funding is a taxpayer's responsibility, and I mean, we must really look very carefully with the money that we have available. 9.1 billion is quite a lot of money, although it seems not to be sufficient at this stage. And what has been said also on the selection criteria and also on the means test that must be completed, our students really adhere to that and make sure that we don't get people hanging around that do not pay but can pay. And then I actually disagree really a little bit with my colleague here. I think when people get money to study, they are there to study. And if they do not qualify or they do not get the required marks, then it is their responsibility to then carry on with it. Because, I mean, I would like to see and emphasize that they get the money for next year. It is not a grant from somewhere else. We must adhere to that, and we must really encourage those students to go out there and study as far as possible. The last issue that I would like to just maybe highlight is the ratio of research funding between equity colleges and universities. Now, obviously, I know that it's much cheaper to study at the equity college and the first year and courses that might be very shorter. There's lots of reasons for it. But what we have seen in our oversight is that the colleges are really lacking funding as far as accommodation is concerned. And that actually means that those people who do not have accommodation in those equity colleges have to get traveling allowance, food allowance, all sorts of other allowances which we cannot really control efficiently. And I would maybe suggest, Minister, that we do not be seekers. I believe that the seekers have a lot of money also, like they do contribute, but I think if we really can spend that 10 billion rand that is also a source for training from the seekers, that we would be able to maybe finance the colleges in a much better way as it is done at the moment from the seekers. Thank you, sir.
Alan Barnes?
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Minister, for coming to this meeting. Minister, I think I must agree with you on one thing, and this is very important. Not only for higher education, but for our country. You see, those who are attending our schools, our universities, deserve two things. One, to be arrested, and to be expelled in those universities. That we should not necessarily discuss a compromise about this. Some of us, including the chairperson in the student movement, were long after the time. When our freedom was clean, we never did anything, but we won our struggles through intensive fight. Organization of students. But never burn our buildings because we believe that those buildings are buildings that are fought for the freedom of our people. Other people should understand, not only in higher education here, but only when we set in office public protests that are violent in our country, that in 1985, some fought to make the apartheid government unworkable and ungovernable. That was the cause made. It was made to make that government not work, to disrupt that government. Currently, we're passing a constitution that all of us in South Africa we put up and make a prosperous South Africa. I think that's what happened to us. Those who ban transport, those who ban schools must be arrested and must be expelled. Cope to the movement, Gaza, all of them should not compromise what is good about the nation. That's why I support fully, and that's the first thing. By the way, I'm the President General of South. Minister, when we talk about corruption on the NSA, in our oversight we're doing oversight judgment, the most important issue has been raised. Most of these students who find themselves in terms with their regulation is that they fall in the end that is not funded. In particular, that relates to civil servants who are lower paid, like teachers, like nurses, and like we have to pay their fees to universities. And those people are not funded, and they actually want access to higher education. And this affects them not only higher education, but funding in housing and so on and so on. And these people are supposed to deliver these essential services to our people. To find them more vulnerable and poor. So what are we thinking as the department in that aspect in dealing with this issue of corruption? The biggest issue we should not take it very lightly. There's no student currently because of the market that has want to leave the university with a diploma. With the call on building a new generation of academics, there's no link in that if you say, okay, go and be on PK and go and stay home. Many students, including one generation, would cost because when you register for a diploma in public administration, you don't want to live with a diploma in public administration. You would opt to have a PK or go to mother. But the NRS cannot fund everyone. We must deal with this aspect of a PK because that's merely understanding most students from historical questions. Believe that a detective is equivalent to a degree. Now, if you leave that here and not address it, you are going to have problems. I find students are asking. I think the department should look into that. If you give what the FCCs are saying, you have taken 1 billion from the civil fund, what makes you not to take 1 billion again for the FCCs? Because the majority of the students would not qualify for universities. It's a big majority. Those who are matriculated, they go for promotion and go to a federal education training institution. But it is not used that. It is because they accept their smaller countries to the bigger country. That these special children have to get less money. On Monday, I'm going to a better store, assuming that they're going to be a strike because of the Singapore NSA. That's what they're coming. But I'll be helping you in that decision. That means that, tell us, the money, the 1 billion that you're taking from CIFAR, CIFAR is the responsibility for money and purpose. You take it from CIFAR, I just want to give you my specific money. Now you go and rent your land and give it to the fund. The money for the Zambian fund will not compromise in that respect. Last question. I know this doesn't fit here, but yesterday I could see there was a lot of excitement about government, about rules. Is there a future for Wusu by you? Can you have a community with you, Wusu, for the next 5 years? With the huge financial burden that is putting into the shoulders of our country, challenges of maladministration, and many other issues. And I know that they have put another inject a lot of money. Can we live with you for the next 5 years? Thank you very much.
Let me check with our members. So the question about when I were able to get the response that well, I thought we still have got plenty of time to engage with our fellow house, with our leadership from the student sector. And I wanted the minister of energy of the engagement members to respond to before this. So let me allow him to respond to this or allow just a short question from my colleague here, and then we allow them to respond. And then we will continue with the debate ourselves. But there's been plenty of time. I'm not sure there's plenty of time. We've got about an hour from now, even 2 hours. So we're debating over lunch if the council is less time.
No, thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. Indeed, I just want to say, you know, with this report, indeed, we've got a good structure here. No, Minister, I'm saying this because the issue of the enrollment really speaks to the your speech in terms of the 2009 deliberation in terms of increasing the enrollment of the education. I just want to check whether these figures of this enrollment within the university sector and the FET sector, that they include the new two universities of Mpumalanga and Northern Cape and the other FETs. That's one. But the other issue, Chair, relates to the issue of the MSFAS with the defraud with those students who are different in the system. My proposal, about say, we should probably find it very intimidating to our democracy. Why people don't respect our democracy and defraud us. And it really doesn't serve a good purpose. But then we should be able to maybe put or criminalize the criminal acts of those students who are different in the system. I think that to be able to also, you know, test all the students who are getting this benefit within the limit. Because all those who are different in the system, once they can be able to go and understand that the criminal offense before the system and then the child can be expelled from the education system, I think to train them. But also probably we should start by putting a voluntary call to say all those who know that they benefiting from the NS funds, not supposed to. Probably minister must put an amnesty first. So say within this period of time there's an amnesty to those who can come forward and say, hey, I defraud the system, I'm sorry. Can I please give away this money so that my parents can be able to afford those who are poor? That we can be able to control, because I don't believe within a short period of time we can triple the NFR budget. Really, it really raises a certain element of question. Can I say, those are defraud the system? They should give an amnesty at the present moment. And if they don't, therefore we move to a main sort of an act that people must be a charge with criminal offense in terms of closing. The other question,
colleagues, may I allow you to finish so that I can allow the members, otherwise we might fail to allow the members an opportunity.
Well, the other issue relates to the 2.6 billion that is being as a shortfall, and to appreciate that, Minister, if you manage to pull in that 1 billion,
and we believe that instead of taking it from the first five and put it there, it's also going to enhance more skills in the higher education sector. But I just want to check, what's going to happen to the other 1.6 billion? How are we going to spend that debt? And if we can be able to also get a kind of sense of that, maybe we can be able to assist that. Let me ask you a question.
Thank you very much. Can we allow the minister to answer the question?
Can I give the 2.6 billion to the teachers and the teachers?
Because that could be ethic and speciality in terms of how we have been trying to
thank you very much, and to honorable members, colleagues. Let me just, thanks for your understanding as well, by the way, because I'm not just saying this that I really love coming to portfolio commissions, because it's a very useful and important platform for engagement and for very critical and important feedback, even if it's critical feedback, from all the parties, by the way. The problem we have is that this committee meets bang same time as cabinet. That's why it's very difficult, because the president is cabinet day is non-negotiable, not being cabinet. If you are, the only excuse you have is if you're outside the country or you're ill. Otherwise, if you're inside the country, you can't have got another function somewhere. We have raised this matter with the leader of government business that it really does require attention. Because I know some of my colleagues here, they say, you haven't been in the portfolio committee for a year, you know, and so on. As if you're sitting in the portfolio committee with today, which is not the case at all. Myself, I'm not one of those who run away. I really love to be in the portfolio committee. Huh? No, I don't run away. No. Yeah, I wasn't taught that way. Yeah. Not to say this is like a bad, I mean, the most terrible way for a revolutionary to die is to be hit in the back because he has been running away. So, listen, without taking much of the time, but for that, we are raising an important issue. This matter of the point system has been raised with me since I became minister. I must say that I have raised this matter with Issa right my early days. And we had agreed on certain things that one, there needs to be transparency about admission requirements of our universities. For example, why do you say this year you need 28 points, for example, to do BSc Agriculture? Say it's an example, by the way. I don't know if people say if I was 28, I entered and take it for PhD and stuff. And the following year is 30. And the next year is 32. First, we have dealing with space here. As university. I'm not saying that the point system is not being abused. That is why we've been calling for transparency. So that people do not get given different reasons. For instance, this is an instance of some students who say, I know of a student who had 28 points at the taken, but I, because I'm an ex student, have been asked to have 30 points. So those things must be used so that the system is not abused or discriminated in this way. But frankly, we just have to expand our university. I mean, this million, it's a crisis, but deep down I'm worried about this. The system as it stands now is already carrying a loss. So, one of the things we want to do as we implement the white paper is to seriously look at a growth strategy. By the way, Honorable Khatir, the only growth way is not building new universities. The only part, because building new institutions has got all new challenges. We also need to look at growing campuses of existing universities as part of the strategy to grow. There's no reason why UCT shouldn't be having campuses somewhere else. Huh? Yeah. In Kailisa, for instance. Yes. Certainly. You know? So we are going to be looking and sharing with you, by the way, this strategy. The new administration, I call it, I don't know whether I was the minister or not. Yeah, well, we're discussing now to look at the implementation of the white paper, but it's going to be a process that you go after. I know which party is going to be in power, by the way. I shall not name it. I don't want to be accused of abusing my privilege separately, being in the portfolio committee. But Honorable Fodana is provoking me. So I can ask for a protection. Now, just very quickly, I would maybe Dai and the DG may want to add on this issue of point system. As well as the figures, by the way, in those subfields, can I leave that to you, DJ? It's a legitimate question. Are there enough black people? I don't think you should be apologetic about that, because we have to change the demographics. We need more black engineers, unashamedly so. We must drive for that. Chartered accountants, we have 50,000 chartered accountants in South Africa. Black Africans, they are just under 3,000. They're unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. That's why we're pushing in the amount of money that the DG was talking. The question of the increase of teachers, we are very proud we have increased teachers. But the challenge is still your medicine science teachers, where we really need to. Of course, we need to be cautious, guys. Someone, one academic said to me, we must be careful that we don't again start overproducing teachers, and only in particular areas. Where there is oversubscription, then you start creating other kinds of problems. But I think we are managing that better. Indeed, 1.4 increase in engineering is not enough. Oh, by the way, in 2012, in our universities, 81% of students at universities now are black. 81%. And 58% are women. So we're not doing better. Now the issue of accommodation and FET colleges is a challenge that we have. We know that. That is why we are saying the 12 new college campuses that we are building, they're gonna have accommodation. But truly speaking, our plan is to bring FET college campuses closer to communities. And that should be our strategy going forward, frankly. We do accommodation, I think, as a transition issue. Because our goal is that should have an FET college in every district. That should be the intention. Which then would make less demand on accommodation, provided we can cover. For me, by the way, the most ideal thing when we really have the kind of education system we want. It's like the transport system at UCT. It's the most impressive thing. There is the university bus. There are buses. You get in there with your student card. They go all over the place. That's what you should be doing at UCT colleges. Ferrying students and taking them to various campuses and so on. But in the meantime, we're also looking at what we call student villages. For instance, where there is a university and an UCT college, we are building accommodation. We should be looking at using those better accommodation for both FET and university students, which is a healthy thing to do, by the way, also at the same time. We agree with the former Secretary General of school. Honestly, I feel as strong as you about this thing of burning buildings, you know, and so on. It's just unacceptable. In fact, it's bad. That counter-revolution in our language, it's just not acceptable. It must be harsh. No one can come and justify it. I was so angry that I burned the library because we were demanding a laboratory. It just doesn't make sense. Now, we'll be ahead. I would rather that with the committee, maybe we give ourselves a bit of time to discuss the issue of the detail, because all the issues that are being raised by Honorable Banga are legitimate, but we do have some dilemmas at the same time. Because government policy says we want to support poor students to at least get one qualification at undergraduate or college level, or at undergraduate university, college students. Now, students who are doing BTEC, they already have diplomas. So they already have an undergraduate qualification. And by the way, many of the students with diplomas do get jobs from your universities of technology. Not all of them, but many of them, they do. Especially in particular fields. Now, the issue then, do we take that money to then support that person who has already has a diploma to go and do a second qualification when there is a huge demand from youngsters who are coming out of matric who do not have yet a qualification, who come from poor backgrounds? That's the issue that we have got to tackle. Because others now are benefiting for the second time and are taking money to those who already have. But I do understand this issue that sometimes students want to do VTEC because in particular fields they are not getting a job. So they think if I have a VTEC I'm improving my chances. We understand that. And even the connection to postgraduate degree. But we have to tackle those issues frontally. As things stand now, we have said we are only going to support particular categories of VTEC, like those who must registered professional engineers and professional nurses or professional accountants. That's not just accountants, but the other categories and so on. But we need to discuss this because it's a major policy issue, not just for government, for the country. We have to make a decision as a nation that while we are not having money to support everybody, if you do second degree or second qualification, what do we do in time? Well, there are many students, by the way, about it. Sometimes you engage them, they understand, but 3 days down the line, they say they call a strike, so that the minister must find details. But when you're sitting down and say, here are the... Ask them to SASCO, for instance. You are privileged as SASCO because you're part of this alliance with the ANC, which is the ruling party. Why don't you go and raise the thing in the ANC government and say, we want VTEC to be funded? Let's just open and discuss that question. Rather than which is, but they ambush me sometimes. You know? They are my brothers, so I'm not. Now, you are raising this issue. I'm trying to be quick, Chair. You are raising this issue because, yes, let me admit. Oh, by the way, we have taken 5 billion, not just another billion, to FET colleges from National Skills Fund over the next 3 years. I can see where it's important this is that you must study hard as students. Yeah, we wish you well. You're talking about doing well here. So shepherding, redirecting. We have taken 5 billion, Chair, over the next 3 years from FET colleges for infrastructure, for equipment, and for other upgrading and lifting of quality in our FET. So the 1 billion you are asking is too little. We have already taken 5. But you are asking an important question, Honorable, through you, Chair. Is this not affecting other NSF programs? It's an important question, because in a way it does. Because amongst other things, the National Skills Fund is meant to address unemployed people. All right. Now, there's the issue that sometimes our own students, for instance, do not like to hear about when we say, but are we already taking even more money to you who is relatively in a better situation than the matriculants, even though we are paid for that matter, we are sitting at home, we have no hope on anything. I was doing grocery for this last weekend, and I come across a young man. He kept a newspaper cutting, which is like, it looks 5-6 years old, and it's just about to fall apart. He said, I would love to be a sports commentator. That's my dream. And this article was about that. This was commenting on a mesh in some rural area and so on. And there was a community newspaper which covered it. He really is passionate. He said, I left school after grade 10. I know I don't have matric. But really, how can you help me? I want to be a sports commentator. You know, he's passionate. That's all what he wants. Now, we should then be saying, there's a candidate for a leadership. SABC, for example. Now, we need to be using the federal money as well as the National Police Fund money. I would say, I think you must invite us also to come and say, what are we doing about leadership? Because we can't just be looking at universities and colleges only. What are we doing about other youth who are sitting at home doing nothing? But we are doing this partly because we think it's a transitional period, because we have not developed adequate public institutions to be able to use NSF money properly. In the past, it was just like Father Christmas this money. So, once we are building capacity, community colleges, for instance, we need to be partly funding them from National Skill Fund for particular skill vocational. Let's then channel it through our formal institution to deal with the problem now. But it's not sustainable going forward. And ideally, that's not the best way sometimes to use all of this money only for students who are at colleges and universities, whilst we have got so many of our youngsters. 3.4 million, by the way, 15 to 24 year olds who are sitting at home doing nothing. So we're being open about that. I know the media is going to start reporting this in their own ways, but we are being honest here. And COPU is the first to defend me in terms of what I'm saying on this particular issue. Oh yeah, I'm going to finish it just now, Jeff. The other important issue, see, it's nice to be in the portfolio committee also, because you have a very sensible engagement, unlike when we're in the house. There is a different logic that applies in. So even COPE is very reasonable in a portfolio committee meeting. And I'm worried that I'm agreeing with COPE too much this morning. Because we have asked NSFAS, maybe NSFAS when they talk that way, we said to NSFAS, please tell us, how do we address those who fall through the cracks? Those who do not qualify for NSFAS, yet they are not, they also do not qualify, they are not rich, they are poor. If you earn 150,000 rent per annum family income, you're poor. But you don't qualify for NSFAS, also the bank won't give you the money. Because it's something that we've asked NSFAS to do. We have got our own ideas as well. But we've asked NSFAS to take a lead. For instance, of course, trillions of rent in the government employees pension fund. Can you not take part of this money and design a loan system for those who fall through the cracks? Because those who fall through the cracks are children of workers, your police, your nurses, your teachers and so on, people who are not rich. University education is expensive for them. But if this were guaranteed, they would pay back those loans. Because they are working, they've got stable jobs and so on. So we've asked NSFAS to look into that, because we are not going to entirely do away with the corruption in NSFAS. Because it's also these ones, you know, who are also trying to have something out of NSFAS. We are not saying this issue actually. So we are addressing that, but NSFAS may want to give you an update, even before they give the minister an update of how far they are with that issue. So I don't mind. I want to call a summit on water to the university, precisely to address some of those questions. Because we want the water to sort of stakeholders to realize the seriousness of the situation there. And for everybody to say, what is going to be our contribution to? You can't just be demanding from an institution that doesn't have money. I was hoping to have done that by now, but now we've somewhat been distracted by some of the challenges to the registration period. But I would have liked sooner rather than later that we have assignments. It's in March already. There is a date, and you are invited, all members of the portfolio committee, to be part of it. 26th of March. Okay. It's nice. You see, the DG and my office are ahead of me, which is good. Because we must go and discuss with all the stakeholders. What is the state of Walter Sisulu University? Precisely to answer that question, what do we need to do if we still want this institution in the next 5 years and beyond? All right, professors, I don't want to celebrate it. Today is the first day of lectures at the brand new University of Mpumalanga. UMP, as this is called, I understand. That's why the Deputy Minister Chesterton is not here, because I asked him to go there. I was supposed to go there, and I prioritized for the committee. But still, I put that in from, I was being away from government at 6 in the morning. I will come here. Lastly, on my side, I'm very determined to deal with the fraud in this house. I'm very, very determined. I don't want to give details here. I hear your ideas, Honorable Khashe. There are some good ideas in terms of what you are saying. That when we actually deal with this, of course, we might even consider saying, all those who have been benefiting from today's amnesty, come forward. Or else, if you don't come forward, we're going to deal with it. As I said, one SRC said to me, yeah, there are many students that's what you are not supposed to get in this. And I said to them, why are you not dealing with this? They are not divided when it comes to this. You know, they say, well, many say no. And I said, maybe I'm scared of losing votes. And they start working with us. But we're very determined. And I agree. 9 billion rand of taxpayers' money is a lot of money. Every cent of the taxpayer matters. We must make sure that it is used what it is intended for. Thank you very much, Mr. President. The other details that I have said, the DG and members of his team may actually want to come in, especially on the number of discussed, because I don't have them in mind. Thank you very much.
Okay, no, I think we can have 2 minutes at a time. We can allow the DG and other officials to continue answering the questions that have come to us.
Oh, thank you, sir. On the guest fee concession for land, a substantial work that we have been in the department currently is a study that has been commissioned through HRC Council, which is looking at the role and contribution of professional coaching in producing practices in areas of care skills. And it has got very useful and telling findings with recommendations, of which then, going forward, one of the things that are happening is professional coaching with working out an action plan as to how is it going to implement and support the good effect of recommendation in training of land graduates in certain taxpayers areas where they are located, you know, at the present moment. And we also agree as well in terms of working out a regulatory framework which will assist in remove barriers which inhibit the production of food and in this sensitive area. So the substantial work which is happening in that. What we're also doing, we are undertaking a detailed audit and investigating as to how figures are telling us that each sensitive area at the present moment is the work that we're doing in the department. But the systemic blockage, there is a proposal at the present moment. We have just finished drafting a cabinet which is going to be served to cabinet specifically on that. so that we expedite the process. Next part, the remaining 1.6 billion. This work which is happening, we have engaged and continue to engage the treasurer on this, and we have worked out the mechanism of addressing the shortfall in its entirety. So we may share details of that as to what has finally turned out to be. But there is commitment from both our side as well as the treasury to find a lasting solution, especially including the gap, let alone looking at the increasing funds for network. So that root process is at the present moment. So we've been left to the master. It's just that 1 billion has to come in to improve cash flow from the standpoint of network to institution, of which it has spent that effort. So that money was not going to be utilized all of it in January or February. You know, it's going to be utilized and the boost cash flow of institutions throughout the academic year. There may be some of the questions. Professional meeting.
Yeah. Thank you. I can't give you the rate profile of the enrollment right now, but I've asked colleagues at the department to provide it. If you do by the end of the meeting, I'll be able to indicate that data to you. But the question specifically about teacher education, are we reducing enough teachers given this increase? I thought it would be helpful to understand this in actual graduate terms. In 2008, we produced 6,112 new teachers into the system. It was far short of what was required. In 2013, we produced, we produced 13,141 new teachers into the system, more than doubled the number of graduates coming into the system. The enrollment planning shows that by 2019, we will be providing 24,000 new teachers into the system yearly. In other words, we will be providing more or less what is required. But the key issue, and I think our minister did indicate that, is the type of teacher that we're talking about. And that's why, as a department, we, over the last 2 years, have implemented the Training Foundation for Teacher Education Program, which was specifically focused on increasing the number of students going into foundation-based teaching, ensuring that foundation-based teachers were equipped to teach in the various indigenous languages and so on. And I can tell you that we've increased the number of foundation-based enrollments over a 3-year period by 98%. So you can see that we've really been focusing on that. Going forward, the areas of focus will be, as the Minister said, certain areas for FET, like the math science, which has been our focus for many years now and will continue. But then also we're looking to be able to support the development of intermediate phase teacher education in the same way that we did foundation phase. And then of course FET college literacy development, which is what we think is the next big area. And we want to use a similar kind of process where we look at how do we put in the development of new lecturers, how do we create understanding of that sector, develop a research focus, and improve the curricula and the teacher education material, which is the process that we're in for foundation-based teacher education. In terms of the others, in health sciences, we not produce sufficient health science professionals for the system, and we've got to work out an integrated plan that will enable us to support that in a way that will start matching the needs. And I think that teacher education is the one we started with in 2007, and it's where we are now. If we put a similar kind of support and planning process in place, in collaboration with the Department of Health, then we will be moving towards those kinds of outcomes. We are in the process of finalising the development of a joint health sciences education committee between the Department of Higher Education and Training, the Department of Health and National Treasury to enable us to really work systemically into what the health science and professional development needs are and how we manage a basis and plan for that and put it into place. In terms of engineering, we produced 9,387 new engineers into the system in 2012, and we expect by 2020 to 2019 to be producing almost 13,500. So we are steadily increasing there. In terms of the enrollment, you're right, the overall enrollment is 1.4%. But if you look at the first time entry enrollment, we're increasing year on year there by 7.8%. In other words, the focus is on success in getting the students out of the system and then ensuring that we increase the numbers coming in so that over time we're going to be able to meet these needs. And there again, we're in a process with ICSA. There's a joint task team in the department that includes both ICSA, the university section, and EDT colleges to deal with the whole pipeline of engineering skills that we need. So I think that from that perspective, the decisions are being taken care of one by one, rather than in a generic way, which I think was part of the problem prior to 2009. There was never any focus plan per area. I think all the other issues have been quite effectively covered by the DG and the Minister. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Justice. Just two questions of which the Mayor can be followed up. The first, particularly related to the DG, can we be assured that the sort of historic data learning deficit now will be kept or that being managed under control and it won't be disruptions going forward? The second, on teachers. What we know is that the average age of teachers is at around 12 retirement almost. So they will exit the system en masse. Now, are we sort of in our plans in keeping with that almost a challenge that may come any time? Will the country be ready to handle that problem, not as a normal kind of attrition challenges or certain the bigger questions in terms of saying if they were to the system almost at the same time, what plans would be there to deal with that?
Thank you. Why would it be convenient for us to take the presentation when it comes, so that our engagement can be comprehensive? I was asking about the underlying questions related to NSF. So the way we forward now these are first things which is facing, which would be very short. I know that the chairperson of God likes to give very subject concise talks, which we enjoy the committee. You might know that the committee does not lie long and take that meeting. We are very focused in our engagement.
Thank you very much for
your question. We'll deal with those issues after the exercise. I'm trying to have time so that by one of the other people, I understand that the point in general is going to be meeting at one. So as the director of this person, I realize that I'm still looking faster. I'm not trying, you know, attitude, I never analyze my people. So unless today I'm a different person, I'm letting you know that I think I'm a school that I'm on this.
Thank you very much. Honorable members and the teachers who have been in other officers. And thanks to also the members of students, leaders of students that you have invited. We are going to be very brief in the field today as NSF.
because our work is so easy these days. What we've succeeded as the body of NSFAS is to make sure that the work of NSFAS is integrated with the work of the partner. While we're working on the making sure that the services of NSFAS are successful, are accessible. And today I'm also accompanied by another board member that's behind me, Mr. Kimisa Matthew, Spodile Matina. I'm just going to summarize the NSFAS mandate and head over to the executive officer of NSFAS to present the details of the NSFAS allocation 2014. I want to remind the members that the success stories of stability that we have achieved in the 5 years of NSFAS, I think we congratulate the support that we have brought from this committee. If there are people that have worked hand in glove with us, are the members of this committee, and we thank you very much, Sir President, for doing that. That has helped us to focus on our mandate, and that is why we got in place to implement the ministerial review recommendations of 2009 that allow us to focus on the mandate of NSFAS is best fund to students at 25 public universities and 15 FEC colleges. So this 25 is a new number for 2014 because of the University of Mpumalanga and Solplank University. Usually we spoke of 23 and we are happy that we are moving forward in terms of that. And I think at this board, and when playing on a site, we make sure that the applicant that must apply for NSFAS must meet NSFAS eligibility criteria as well as the academic ability. And we emphasize that point of the academic ability. I was saying that credit cannot be only the board of NSFAS and NSFAS itself and the Department of Education. It is the success of this portfolio committee because since 2009, the increase that we are reporting to you, that today is up to over 9.7 billion in the money that we dispersed with universities and colleges, if it was not us proving our capacity and the way we interact with the key stakeholders, in particular the portfolio committee, which is Parliament. I don't think the Department of Higher Education and Training for the Minister would have confidence to make sure that NSFAS is allowed to administer that these amounts. But I can assure you, we no longer talking about agencies at NSFAS. We've got people to do the work. Even ourselves as the board, the past stage of turnaround to NSFAS, moving with the executive officer and staff. So hence, I'm saying that I used to say that the 15th aeroplane plane was flying very high. But I think now, with the transformation program of which the executive officer is going to report on, we are building a new strong aeroplane that will fly all over the country and make sure that we've got the stability in education. Having said about the increase from 3.2 billion that we spoke about in 2009 up to over 9.7 billion in 2014, that will allow 450, about 450,000 students to begin the system. We still have a lot of challenges in terms of defending students that are eligible for the NSFAS allocation that cannot be accessed as a result of this money cannot be denied. I must say that so many things the minister spoke about them, that NSFAS challenge, and that is the reason why we have got the pilot of the transformation program, is we are dispersing money to institutions, yet our client is students. And therefore our transformation program and our pilot it to money for the students. And therefore, we are now going to make sure that we don't have 25 ways in defense 25 universities of dealing with the disbursement of money, or 50 ways in 50 and 50 colleges in terms of dealing with the money. We are going to make sure that there is a central point, and that our pilot is going to prove that we are in control of the resources of the taxpayers' money. Without further ado, Mr. President, I'm going to hand over to the executive officer, Mr. Swetch, to take us to the details of what I'm talking about. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee, my colleagues and the guests of the committee. I will deal with the issue that has been asked to present the committee on the allocations. We have prepared some tables on the preliminary allocations for 2049. I say preliminary because these numbers are still far from finalized. There are still some finals that are still confirming the numbers. But just to show the number of students that we are expecting from the university is in the region of about 250,000 because of the additional funding that has been injected into the bank. For about 7.6 billion and was put down by institutions. The FET colleges were an allocation of about 2.1 billion, expected to cover about 210,000 students. And those numbers are also preliminary because they rely on the finalization of the enrollment figures at the various colleges throughout the country. But just one of the issues that we have discussed on is around the pilot and what we have seen in the first few weeks of the implementation of the NSY transformation program. I think what has become apparent is some of the problems that we could postpone in the system with the old system in the pilot, we can't postpone anymore because the numbers become apparent early. We know, for instance, in all the private institutions, how many students can register because they have teacher debt. How many students can register because they were claimed from prior that were in excess of the allocation. And we already know in the private institution that there is a funding shortfall at MMU or CUT of so much money. In the institutions that are not in the pilot, that number is only going to be confirmed sometime later on this year. And the pilot now is bringing in those numbers up front and we're able to present data and say MMU has got a shortfall of so much money. One of the things that we have heard is the fact that as we are implementing the pilot, we have had some certain problems as we have recovered now from that stage. We now continue with the registration at DUT. We have had a stable platform at DUT. And then we are on the verge of enhanced stability. I think we're working together with the University of State and the new investor track. The investor of Venda is working according to our expectations. At UCT, we have worked on a system where we do a mock, and UCT continues to run the system as they were doing it in previous years. With the FET colleges, we also are running well. One of the challenges that we're finding in the FET colleges, I think, is the capacity of the officers of the FET colleges to deal with some of the data requirements. We have dispatched people to Motor City College to work with them, King University College to assist them, and We also, in some of the colleges, we're beginning to unravel some of the problems that they've already had, but now we do not know them upfront. We're now beginning to know, for instance, in one of the colleges, we've had the accommodation providers that had applied to the college, where the college felt that there were things that they were doing that are incorrect, and the students demanding to stay in those accommodation establishments. And we're now right there in the midst of all these things, but these are some of the lessons that we're finding out in the pilot that if we're not there, we would not have been able to pick up those things any now in the system. Stepping out of the pilot, moving to the other institutions, I think one of the big things is here, and when we come and talk about allocations and registration for this year, we could not talk about it without talking about what digitalized the system this year. I think the minister has already mentioned that the digitalization of the system is something that is in some institutions is becoming customary at this time of the year. But I think it's important to say, there are a few things that came in this year. One of them was historic debt. The students that owed the university debt that was much older than 2013. But the university of all the registered those students, and that's building up the debt. And at some point, some university said, you can't register because you owe the university debt. But the big one, and I think that's probably the draw that probably came as best, was the claim that they had access to qualifications. For students went on throughout the year 2013, believing that they were funded. Came January 2015, the university said, no, no, NSFAS owes us money, we can't register you because NSFAS owes us money. In reality, what the universities were saying was, you actually are not funded because we sent empty claims to NSFAS for 270 million. And NSFAS doesn't have that 270 in the bank accounts because they're not part of the original allocation. And the friend guy of our university started quoting big numbers in the press saying NSFAS owes us so much money because they have sent students signed over to them for some instructions have already been spoken to by the colleagues from the university branch. And the issue of unfunded programs, also the detail I think has been addressed, so I'm not going to talk about it. And it became a destabilizer because what happens is student leadership, the student leaders are senior students. And some of the student leaders were now the big experience. That means it was no longer a struggle for the people, but it was a personal struggle in some instances for the student leaders themselves. But they were themselves being excluded because DJ as a program is not being funded. Just on how we're trying to save the system in terms of registration, we've allowed investors to claim up to 30% of their annual allocation as an upfront payment. To date, there are three universities that have submitted and have paid their claims. It's the University of Porter, the University of the Western Cape, and Mamo City University of Technology. And we're here to say that each of those are the universities that don't have the cash flow to sustain themselves during this time of the year. We've also paid the colleges, we the colleges have decided to go for a blind approach that all the colleges will give a 10%, so whether they do ask or they don't, we just give a 10%, because we think all of them will need to be able to pay, especially for out-of-pocket expenses to students. Just the schedule of upfront payments that will take to various colleges, we've just summarized it. Based on the provinces that were paid. I will not spend much time on the check. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Let's take questions and comments. I'll start with Honourable Fred. Let me start with the student question that I have kind of issues.
Thanks, Jefferson. And members of the committee. Name is Dr. Charity, President of PAMS. I just have three comments and one question to the three presentations that we received. The first comment that I want to raise is perhaps to the university sector on the argument advanced around the issue that student leaders are consulted. I think it is important that the committee must know is when the consultation takes place as well. At a point where it seems that the consultation is for understanding, or it's in the final stage, we're not part of conceptualizing certain issues, it becomes a problem. And that is how it will prevent the backlash from the student. I use the example of ECFAS, for example, with a pilot. Is indeed correct, Daniel, when Nepako, you say, the reason is pilots don't understand why students at UCT or GUT are complaining. But part of the issue was that at an SRC level, when an SRC only sign off on the fourth and will be handed the next year, it becomes a sort of a problem for them because they don't understand it, they don't know what's going on. And I think that what ought to come out in the discussion is that when we put out, it ought to be seen that even in the conceptualization of part and parcel of that, we should know, however, that the last year or so we have seen the ministry come head on with consultations, and we do appreciate that and hope that even the new minister or the new minister will continue with that. The second point that I want to raise, and this is that the comment that was raised around the student process that we've seen. Now, I think let's not be curious in our analysis. I think the former MD of Fasco speaks head on the issue of student transparency. The student movement has come out correctly and said we ought not to have buildings. But in our events, let's not be curious. The point that I'm trying to try is that firstly, at a point where we realize that universities should not really expect the solution changing criteria, what of our involvement as stakeholders in ensuring that some sort of communication comes to them? Because at a point where students react to that, There's an argument that might want to discuss at a point where students who deserve and should be allowed to return and get their end of class money and don't get it. That is part of the disruption. So the disruption doesn't come when the students are then responding to an existing disruption. I think we also start to talk about that issue. We have said as South and the Fed and the student movement that we ought to not allow students victimization. And that is what we're seeing in our institutions of higher learning. I'll just give you example, the University of Johannesburg and CUT. Both of those universities where we didn't get any response of research, for example, of any burning or anything happened, all those cases were to court, and the court ruled in favor of some of the suspensions that were put by the university. You can't suspend students indefinitely and saying that they're not allowed to register when they're raising any concerns. And to then say that I hear the minister, not the minister of police, but we've got a role in situations where the university abuse and the issue of institutional autonomy and victimized students, and in some cases, telling them for 10 years, we've got a responsibility and stakeholders to speak into that situation. The last point, the last 2 points I want to raise, and I think it's time for the presentation and then after that, I would appreciate us not using an iceberg analysis of the BTEC issue. It's not the past because there are senior students who are going to be benefiting from the second. And I think it is even wrong to say that it's an issue. And I think the minister correctly said that we also need to any policy level, one step to stand. Because it is a real threat of students who graduate from the second and there is no employment. So in actual fact, we're wasting money funding them in the first couple of instances because they're not able to further the courses. And I think we have to have an honest discussion and not just about to say that it's students who are wanting to benefit from that. The last point that I'll raise, and I'll allow my colleagues to speak, is that although we know the good story that the government really does have to tell, and it is their education, I want to say, it's a very interesting question to ask, that how do we ensure that the good gains that we've done in increasing the funding, as we've seen, are not undermined by the exorbitant fee increments that universities continuously do? Because you've got a situation where, and this is not the student movement as a part of the debate, where every single year government is trying its best to fund students, but it is met with a response from institutions who increase the increment at a ridiculous level, and therefore undermine the gains that we could make. So we also speak at how do we sort of analyze that at the policy level, how do we deal with the issue of institutional autonomy, so that those efforts that are made by government are not undermined. I think I'll stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. My name is Banyan Dwali, Secretary General of South Africa. I would like to speak on the presentation made by the DDG, Dr. Maharasa, on page 8, the first paragraph of your presentation. You speak of the new guidelines, of the new guidelines for the present. And we take note that there are quite a few policies in the guidelines that are not actually feasible and some have been scrapped, and that's according to the presentation. And we think one of the reasons that is the case is because not all relevant stakeholders were consulted when this particular policy was actually made, and that is inclusive of FAFSA. I also want to speak on the 40 kilometer radius that you mentioned when the policy says students that live within a 40 kilometer radius, that means they are not going to receive the MS bus transport fare. That is I do not think we completely disagree with that notion, because we do not believe that there is a student that is capable of walking from home to an institution for 30 or 40 kilometers and then be expected to receive education. On the same note, we would like to also raise the issue of residences. On the issue of residences, we are aware that most of our ST colleges do not have sufficient residences, if not at all. Therefore, because we also sit in council meetings, we are aware that there are actually the colleges do have reserves in their bank accounts, and therefore we propose that they actually send a budget to the department to see what is it that they plan to do with those amounts, and then the department recommends that they build residences or even source outside private accommodations, because in most FET colleges, we find that students are scattered all over town or that particular township. Perhaps they live next to a garden, and then that also contributes to the patterns of FET students. We're also concerned about the articulation between FETs and universities, and all the universities of technology. You find that when you are in NSIC graduate and you go and you apply in a university of technology, they will tell you that you must study S2 during the course of semester 2. One student will say, I have NSIC and yet I started at semester 3. Why did you study 2? Means there is no standard, way of actually accommodating these students, and it is not fair. Arbitration is currently not taking place. And on the issue of student victimization, as mentioned by the latter speaker, it is affecting the transformation of FETs, in fact, high institutions of learning in a very, very great manner. Because student leaders, they stand for the rights of students, of which we are very clear to say that those are not privileges, but the rights. However, student leaders are victimized by the management of these institutions, and they do not account. The only way we can actually find peace, what we do say, rather suspend a student on student leadership, but not on education. Because we know very well that if the management threatens you as a student, there is nothing that you are going to do. Even if you take them to court, you are going to lose the case. It is now a fact. We know it. On the issue of NSFAS, we are aware that they are piloting, and we are going to see the results of that. However, we have got a concern at SAPESA that if the Department of Higher Education and Training can give funds to FET colleges that are maybe double the amount that they allocate to bursaries, and the colleges maybe for maintenance and rates and so on, and the colleges are accountable for that money as to how it is spent, and they are being audited, why can't the same be done on NSFAS in FET colleges? Is there feasibility of that happening, such that students can be paid on time, those that do qualify, of course. And we also want to give credit to the department on NSF, because we are aware that NSF is paying actually 100% of the cost that actually assists the students, because we are aware that there are also apprentices that are taking place in SDGs, in the workshops, and the students are getting stipends. And we are saying that we are very happy about that, and we fully appreciate it. And on the issue of registration and enrollment, there were students that were owing the institutions from the previous year, and now they had to get their results, and the institutions refused. And they said, no, because you owe the college, you cannot receive the results. Now, we seek clarity as to, are FET colleges allowed to withhold results from a student, whether they are owing or not? And there was a case in Mpumalanga whereby a student got private funding from a particular company, but because they owed the institution, they could not receive that funding because they owed the institution, and then the institution withholded those results of that particular student. Thank you very much, Dr.
Sir, Director General of Fire Station Training, and other parties, Director Karen Garcia. Sir, my colleague here, by the way, I'm the only one that the Deputy President of Company. My colleague here has mentioned a lot of things, but sir, I would like you to allow me to reference one of the crucial questions that we have in Papel. There's this issue surfacing of the new attendance policy, the 80% attendance policy that you received from that department. The policy that I'm talking about is now being implemented. But as Papel, again, we are saying, we know that we have a crisis of attendance in particular in FBT colleges. And the primary reason as why students are not attending is because of the funding that we are receiving from NSFAS that is coming later on about September at some time. We are not saying, Honorable Director General, you did with your colleagues, it was a future exercise for you to develop that policy. But we are saying again, it's practically, it is going to assist whereas we have registered students who are from poor backgrounds, but if you look at their academic record, their academical is in this background. But at the same time, because of the fact that they are from poor backgrounds, they can't even move from their homes to this institution of Ireland. You understand? Because of one factor, they cannot finance themselves. You understand? These are other recipients, and as far as I understand that they elaborated in terms of saying they are having challenges. And one other challenge that was mentioned to us was that they only have one office, you understand? That's the other challenge. But what I'm trying to raise is the fact that it's hard for students who are attending on this bazaar to attend classes. Because let us bear in mind that the NFS bazaar is made especially for children of the poor and the working class, but not the young. You understand? We were talking about students who have just produced economics. You understand? Now, my question is that how has the department created that police? And did they also look at the material conditions in terms of the attendance? You understand? There's that crisis, and I would like them to clearly give us a picture as to the reason why they have developed this policy.
Okay, I think let me just end there, Chair. Thank you, Chair. My name is Nelson Legendre. I'm an executive member of SOAS. I avoid reputation, but my team will go to NFS. We actually speak with them that we will kindly say, please, those students that are qualifying their accounts before the end of the year to avoid the issue of sending balances when 2014 comes. So we cannot have this issue of strikes and unstableness in universities. And another note, I've been hearing in the House as like, oh, are we that there is so much fraud going on with NSS? What is the day about to ensure that it comes to an end and as soon as possible? Because we can't have everyone being allocated, but then we just don't know what the pattern is being used, except in institutions of higher learning. How about if we have NSS being unheard, being able to actually monitor that what happens with this fund that are being allocated in those institutions? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we must correct something which is very dangerous that the CEO of NFS itself said. Yeah. This other thing that students are fighting for this issue of the debt because the students that are affected is completely wrong. It must be condemned. We refuse to accept that. We have raised this issue here to the minister. The minister understands what it means. Not only the minister understands it. When we went to the Nelson Mandela, the academics, the science, not the students, they raise this issue. They appeal to us to engage government with it. That's what is irresponsible for us, you see, to say students when they take up issues. Because personally, they say something, these people are leaders of the people. It's like saying to me, Kanaman to say to me, why am I raising these issues? I'm electioneering. It's like saying that. It's equivalent to that. We are raising these issues and students are raising the issues of students for the students and groups of students in general. This is the background which that was used to contain some of us. And I refuse to listen to it. It today is wrong. It's not like that. I even raised myself this issue. When I was a student leader, I raised this issue. I continue to raise it. Even myself. Thank you on that part. I want to understand, by the look of things, I know we are very passionate about it. We went to Rome and Nelson Mandela, we saw two different things. We've seen that once NFS is putting money to fund universities, and at the same time fund universities, putting more money in terms of college students. And this is the two universities who could pick up that aspect. And the head continues to say, we do not want an academic involved in student being excluded. And we found ourselves in difficulty when we said, guys, we don't want an academic involved in student to be excluded. They said, but look, and I will put this man. Instead of any person looking in the first something, it's us who are putting more money. I'm going to share about this kind of reward. One is a good story, but there's a bad story about it. The bad story about it is that we've made commitments and we've been told that no academically deserving student in GE who's performing very well with their students. 2 years ago, I asked this question, what does this mean? Now, I remember 2 years after that, there is a possibility that of academically deserving students that can be excluded. That's the only matter way. Look at what UJ is doing. Because UJ 80% to me might not be because they are rich or conservative. They are rich, they have 100 grand. But we have 500 students from the benefit. Therefore, if you want to distribute this equitably and first increase the qualifying rate of people, meaning the main problem there is the availability of funding. How do we deal with this promise that was made? I don't want to say who made the promise, but it was made in the public television national. No academic learning strength will get sugar. What are we going to do according to that? That's the first one. The second one is on cash. This thing is cash. You spoke about the lack of that information, because it also raises to me the level of knowledge we have about. For instance, part of your report, I think it was page 5 in your report, you raised, you know, people. And you see that you do not know how many spaces were there. Like the other one you said in Vars or CPC, the students can work, can just go. We try to address the working situation, but in terms of the report, you are saying, no, they can walk there. What makes you to say they can walk there is because you do not have the actual details of the available space in different fields. Now, I was thinking to myself, whether this approach, because seemingly universities, it's not the will of universities to provide this kind of information. And seemingly this thing is just a labor worker to me, to correct me. A labor worker that goes and looks for spaces. Are we creating an high education labor book or what? Because if it cannot know and give us information that we are able to put students in these universities, why do we need the central resources for us? The counseling part of it, I'm very concerned about this counseling part. Counseling is not about career guidance. You know, when can you check? A student receives, okay, I'm good, and receives a master's degree. A parent makes a pass today. My children have passed, my kids have passed. Very big fans, they think they are going to run out. It's UJs, all of them. Now, if you get to UJs, no, you don't qualify. The other friends qualify. The actual psychology that is saying that there was that way. And then to men, country. That the Western country for itself to understand. This I'm reading because when we say students, we could see students collapsing in front of us as students. Therefore, if this electronic company is not aware, it's dangerous. And I want to know, how do you deal with this actual counseling of students who get themselves, who find themselves in this situation, being rejected by telephone? Thank you very much.
I'm a man of time, and I just hope that I should synchronize it with you in a nice manner, as you always do as members.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll address our decision for the presentation. Chair, I think the table of allocation, university by university, college by college, I see the amount under the state, and they make me speculate and guess why. Even if it's not today, is it possible for us to get information, this university has enrollment so much, so they got so much? Because I guess it has nothing to do with enrollment, but possibly also the poverty level. So if we have that, that information, it will help us a lot. Now, 40 kilometers on the channel. I mean, even 10 kilometers, even 5 kilometers, not really reasonable. Expect people from that system. 5 kilometers. I know that that one supplies at the secondary and primary schools. Now 4 kilometers. So I thought as far as universities, I read the background of the fact that there is no accommodation would incentivize students to stay home and say to them, those in the, you know, these 40 kilometers, we should be saying to them, we encourage you not to stay at hotel. And we're giving you money to be able to commute between your home and the school. Because we see accommodation has cold. So we should look at ways, and I suspect, Chairperson, it would be cheaper to fund the transport of this learner into home and school than pay for hotel. For this land, because people are basically exorbitant and people want money of milking this car. So I think there is something wrong with the policy there. We should be encouraging those who can to stay at home while attending and commute. Now, here is the contradiction, Chairperson. Upfront payment, this is what this slide says. Upfront payment is paid to avoid demand all students that they should pay registration fee. But NSFAS has some universities still demand NSFAS students to pay. It can't be either. It can't be separated. Because one of the reasons why we know that the 80% advance was to make sure that students are not excluded. Now, if the two have the vessels are still told to pay upfront, I don't understand. Firstly, they qualify because they are poor. I don't want to discuss individual things. The matter would like to take the DG and NSFAS when you know about. Yesterday, I was talking to some student leaders at UNICEF, and they are saying that about 5,000 students are unable to register because somebody wants upfront payment. And I want to leave you to the issue of victimization, because these leaders spent 5 nights in jail last year. Was arrested because the university made criminal charges against the student and charges were done wrong. So student leaders are being intimidated when they ask for the cost of the student. And they've come to our constituency office this chapter and we told them what we know. If you are on NSFAS vessel, if you are a vessel, you will not be expected to make up that front payment. What we say to those students? Because something is similar in there now. I've done this in certain examples. It may not be at all other schools. I want to know what advanced payment given to university.
in this specific case. And the other state is given to those who request. Has universal consent. Upfront payment, have they been given? And then when we have the answers, we can then make a follow up. Why are our students being harassed the way they are being harassed? Thank you.
Just one concern around the students who are made to sign an agreement forms and to learn later that they've not obtained MFIs and end up in debt. I just want to know what to learn or what corrective measures that MFIs have to save such students from, I mean, giving false hopes that they have got MFIs. I mean, to let the sign an agreement form, tell them that they probably have obtained MFIs, but to eventually lead them into debt. And the last one, Chair, is this blacklisting. In the past, I thought the Department for MFIs said that students will only be blacklisted once it has found out that they are now employed. But this is not what is happening. Those who have not as yet got employment get blacklisted. Is there a way of connecting with this situation?
Okay. I'd like to check something on the MFIs. What happens to the old system of payment? Because I can't understand that the introduction of the new system of payment was the old system. Was slow or was not working properly. If so, I mean, because there is still problem with the payment as a person speaks. But what are challenges in that? Because I'm trying to understand, but I cannot say. My also last question here goes to the SCT letter. So they spoke about the issue of examination results that, you know, this year improving and their delivery in terms of the expected. And it's just the other two results that they've been released. When are they expected to release those results? One, but two as well. And are they still having challenges in terms of releasing this? And the last one, the information. I just wanted to also provide solutions. There are challenges here, but I've never heard them saying what effort are they going to pull through in assisting in blocking those students who are benefiting wrongfully from the MFIs. I never heard that in terms of their solution. In every leader, say that this is the solution that you are providing for. And what else are they also doing in assisting the process of using the higher education system? Thank you.
That's one point. I think the focus for this was in terms of particular colleges aiming for claims for students who are not religious. To me, that it makes sense because I've always been asking myself what happens when you have so much talk of religion. Because I don't think any staff is able to share that and be able to people were supposed to pay for $200,000, and at some point, half of that dropped. What happens to me? I was able to pick that up and say, there's no need to proceed and pay for those money. Can we be given information in that black action? And so, how do we reconcile this? And we turn out in the court of this and start, because a lot more drop out, and there's nothing that was told in that black action. So, how the money goes.
Let's allow Alice to respond to those questions that make us fight. If it is a country, the religious knows it, take it home and see how you deal with it as you improve the policy framework. The point which I thought we should emphasize from one side is the issue of this initial course of study in our institution. I think as a country, there must be a response. We cannot have the agenda to achieve free education being prevented by university councils, by the method of increasing fees. You see, our universities, some of them, have got varied and diverse funding streams, as the good doctor said. We give them direct transfers every year. We give them money from NSF, money from NS funds, money from the C-Towns. They get donors. They even have revenue generating projects. Yes. They still find it possible to exclude returning students that meet the NSF criteria and that are doing very well. And that also contributes to low success rate. It's very dangerous to the issue of participating on. It is self-treating. I think maybe there must be some sort of negation by the committee, all universities, the department, and the sponsors of financial exclusion and unprecedented fee increases in various institutions. But people are not careful. Now that the universities and the colleges are aware that the minister and DG can just get from 1 billion, they can increase fees now. Exclude students. Every time, because they have overage. They do not realize that the problem is their own institutions, not the actual government. Because in the last 5 years, the communal governance is expressed through funding to institutions. I think that is the bottom of the card. The second one of the card is from the students. We know that there are students who actually wait at bookshops and buy bookshops rather. It's not for money. They buy products for people. Some people didn't have. The students from around here made a presentation in Parliament. They said they can't believe who is the mascot that is violated. The result of that, we need transport to cross the bridge. Sometimes we need police to be around that bridge all the time when we go to school. Now everybody looks at something as a response to everything. And I think that is the final study must talk about leaders. It's not a good way. But We are forgetting everything, and in fact, everybody now, they think about money, they don't want to think about their books to study. When they wake up, they think about how do I get money for transport, even if I'm saying 2 kilometers away from the city. All of us, Banga, will be funded by their personal money. It has no component for food, for books, for all the things. It was all choices, and it was about 60% Banga and 40% loan. It will pass all their costs. Now, in the current moment, the student didn't say that the 80% attendance policy is not good. Why is it not good? It's a good thing. But this money is not obstructing students who don't want to come to class and who pay. We don't want that. As people must
the university of Holland, go somewhere else. Go deep hole somewhere. But we need people who are able to go through the system. Not people who are going to contribute to the institutional bars, but stay there continually for years on end. We don't want that. If you don't qualify, grant us to pick up the book to go through the system, go and read the whole. And ask yourself, why am I not able to understand these few books? Am I really able to do this? Must I not allow my younger brother to pursue this? I mean, we must talk bluntly about us, but as a council, we can't allow that. I think the point we are taking from members to say, can you look at the policy? Is the 40 kilometers radius a good response? I'm sure we can take that from anything about it. We may not be looking here, what's not a platform to do so, but I'm thinking the discourse must be generated and see as to what ways and means can be utilized to determine as to the person that we should really take home. Not all of us would much from NSF at home. It's not true. I mean, why some of us were able to use our grandparents' grounds to get money to eat as university? We did that, brother. I think now there is this argument that is emerging among society that even when you are there next door, you forget to even argue with the system. And that's all about money. That's not how much. But in this country, because we are trying to change the structural limitations that enforcement and others can also accept education. But yet some people who want to realize this system and manipulate it in a way that you can achieve that goal. All we achieve is that we'll be putting more money but more success. The students that are eligible for this will not speak about the fact that only 25% of students are able to pass. The rest, the students that this money go and dance and drink and so on. And it's made in the end. They go home, they don't cross the red carpet. That's what we must address. But what is going to be our result? Because now it's not bigger. Let's talk about the pastoring. Where are we? What is the student movement and the student that the next was doing to address that aspect? I think we must tighten that today and address those issues as a country so that we really, really move forward. Can I now ask one person, all those that need to require resources, all those that are theoretically and the conceptualization issues, who will deal with the next to go over the country?
Thank you, Professor. I'll deal with the question. All the questions raised by Professor funding from NSF Rising Links. I think we demonstrated in the slide that we already paid colleges 10% of their money now. Therefore, they can go back to the colleges and ask them where is that 10% that NSF has paid. On the issue raised by Anas Makurera on the dropout of learners, we entirely depended on the university on that case to tell us that these students have dropped out. And therefore, they will then come back to credit on that particular learner. But we are entirely dependent on the data side, because we don't have the data on when students are dropped out of university. Universities that control the quality of information that comes to us. We suspect that not all of them tell us when students leave the system. But that's just a suspicion. Honorable Rector raised a question on the old system of NSPAT. We're still using the old system of NSPAT to pay, but we're just piloting a new system in terms of pay. I saw another point on it that there are no students that are interested by NSPAT, and if there's a situation of the best in the city, that one I can put my head on the phone and say no student is interested by NSPAT. So we don't even have a process to do that. On the issue of Unifen, Unifen is one of the investors in the pilot, which means that the students in Unifen, we share with Unifen the information that these are the students that are the pilot, and they will get so much money. Therefore, there's no student that should require to pay any registration that is in the list of pilot students. If there's the 5,000 or so students that are being referred to are in the list of NSF funded students, the university knows that those students will be funded from this funding category, and this is the amount that the students will fund. Because that's what we do in the past. We share that data with the investors. They are in the second group of primary ways to share the data with the rest of primary, especially for the 10 students that are being checked in earlier. And that is the issue of the investors that are still demanding upfront payment. With investors, we don't give them an automatic 30% allocation. Those that need to say they should apply for it. What's the reason that we don't do that? Because from a church perspective, members do not have all the money to pay all the investors. And we know that some of the investors are able to carry that period and give the children allowances. It's mainly the total disadvantaged investors that want to assist through that period and make sure that we provide them with cash flow to give to students. I think what the way I'm presented, that I really respect the way I presented, it was not meant to come out that way. I think that it's fair that I should respect, you know, the way I presented the issue of the details. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Let me take a cover up from the cover and then we can take it to our a leader would like to say something after. That is a follow-up. I really hope the PG is taking note of what is being said. Because, as I said, any university that does not have the capacity to accept students without making payments will make a request and that given. Those that don't make requests, the assumption is that they are able to do that. There are no cash flow issues. So why, question three is why, and no, I suspect that department also knows that there are students who are unable to register and are told to make a front payment. And this includes returning students, because we have a fair understanding now of how things work. If the students have been locked up, the question is, were you a better owner last year? Yes, I said, no, since 2010. Have you passed? Yes, I've passed. What is the plea? What is the plea? And again, student leaders are saying, we think crisis is a crime. But that people don't think that a recipe for conflict in university. I really hope that it is noted, because that way our problems are. No student should be required to make up a state up front payment if the student is vulnerable.
Thank you, Judge. My name is Yalunga. I'm a member of SOUS. I think what we need to appreciate before closure, sir, that those who appreciate the 1 billion by the government, and we also appreciate some of the initiatives, the free time, NFS, and so on. But I think what you need to understand is that those two students would be outside that money, that recovery money that has been allocated. As well, the registrations are closed. I'm aware that students in the Cape and Insular University of Technology, the registration is closing on the 29th of February. And there's still loads of students who have not been registered and who are part of the pre-accepted list of NSF in the current year. But with in an informal discussion that we had with Mr. Dasha in the present meeting, so that universities must be told that they must register those students, and through the engagement of the TG with the national treasury, where there would be possible funding for 2014, those students will be able to recover from that. Because now we're seeing with escalating problems of students who have not been registered because of historical debt and students who are basically NFS recipients, who have always been NFS recipients, who are going to be NFS recipients in the current year. But something I wanted to raise outside the NFS presentation as well, but I, you know, line of noting you forgot me, is that in this presentation, as part of the enrollment in the admission of students, we've seen universities that have undermined the national certificate bond and have used the NBT as a primary source of accepting those students. It was a joke when UCT, one student, he was a graduate of UCT, he was going to enroll for honors for something in humanities. That student was required to write an NPT that is a product of UCT. And that person failed the NPT test, and you can't understand
why would you make your own product to write AM entity test? So we've seen a track record of students in the current year, especially universities that have not undermined the NSS national certificate on and use the entity as the primary source to allocate or to attract students to that. As well, I think I want to agree with the Honorable Nava Banga on the fact that it becomes difficult for us to deal with the issue of enrollment for 2014 if we don't have data. Because we don't know, there are still students outside universities working in, working out, without hope, and who do not even know what they are going to do in the current year. Classes are started in most universities, but people are still there looking for school without anything, without any hope. The FSC colleges are going to close as well their registration, but there's nothing that is happening there. I think there should be some information from the department to tell universities. We've also requested from Mr. Gazi to say, talk to your university managers, talk to your vice chancellors. Let's have an agreement between us and them, because anyway, they're going to be funding their through the PG and the national treasures. Thank you very much.
But I think the point is that we may not be empowered to deal with the peculiarities of this virus in our meeting now. I think as the committee would continue to urge our universities not to exclude academically definite students that meet the criteria of NSFIs and the institutions to return, was it is an antithesis to our strategic intent to have free education for the poor and disadvantaged in our country, at least for an undergraduate qualification. Now, we will take forward the engagement in various levels. Our purpose to invite you as the leadership is precisely to be on the same edge on issues, because when we arrived at the Nelson Mandela National University to itself, we were received by a dignified of course demonstration of students who are saying we reject centralization of NSFIs and so on. It was a misunderstanding, because these are purposes of the people. They must be accountable. The practice of university making claims for fictitious, fictional, and non-student is over. Man must be attached to student number in a big pattern, so that we can follow this man. And if the student is not performed, we know the student is a student who is still coming for that particular student, then that money could be used for another different student. So I think that is an approach where we are adopting. And NSFIs itself was acting in response to what the committee was calling for. If people that have not been following that, the committee was saying, we are giving money, but we don't seem to know who are students. Because in any event, they don't ask. Some of them drop out, and then only half of those are remaining part. So, something is happening. That's why money has followed the student. And nobody would select that. This is our collective perspective, and we're moving on, which is that we think there is the strategic intervention that we have made. I would like to thank everybody to thank the honorable members, the minister, and the DG, and all the teachers. Unless there is the national anything, maybe they would like to tell you something else.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just clarify the 40 kilometer radius. I think it needs in his certification. What we are saying is that the students who live within the 40 kilometer radius do not qualify for accommodation allowance. However, they qualify for transport allowance. So the expectation is not for them to walk, you know, the whole 40 kilometer to and back.
I think that clarifies the question then. Yeah,
that's one, Chair. I beg your pardon. I'm a bit concerned that student leadership is not addressing itself through the question of fraudulent claims, corruption, as well as WPD, by students. Last day, ST College has lost more than 4 million on fraudulent transport claims by students. And that matter is being addressed by a colleague right now. Now, these are practices that are really looking at weakening the capacity of the state to provide to those who are children. We can't require James from this. Other children are that JP. We raise that to this college today, next week, we are raising that in another college. And next person says, and students know some of the anomalies in the city. It is important that student leadership that address itself on these areas. Who will attend to the areas that are in the sphere of our competence as well, in support of the students, because all these resources are made available for the students actually succeed, including attendance.
No, thanks so much. That point is very again, I'm sure I hammered on it, and I think it's an addition to what we said as a committee. But I think we need to deal with that aspect of abuse of state resources by some unscrupulous students. But that's what we are going to deal with. Thank you very much. I can see outside the Auditor General already waiting to enter the arena. Thank you very much for the meeting.